Addiction, like other types of ailments, are not curable. They're treatable. They don't just go away. I think it's not just a loved one that has to have patience. There are providers who would actually stop from seeing someone and treating them. It's too much of a liability.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Mindful Space. Today, we have Dr. Sal. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great. I'm going to let you introduce yourself. Okay. I'm sure you're going to do better than me.
So I'm Dr. Sal Rajbeck. I'm the Chief Clinical Officer for Haven Health. And my responsibilities is to assist in the overseeing and managing of our clinical programs nationwide.
Oh, a lot of responsibilities there.
It's a great responsibility and it's a fun responsibility.
Perfect. Today, we want to talk about drug usage, overdosing, fentanyl, a whole bunch of fun things, right? So I want to jump right into it. How would you define drug overdose? What are some symptoms? What do you need to look out for?
Simply stated, taking in abundance, taking more than prescribed amount of any substances can and is considered to be abuse and an overdose potential.
Okay. Now, what are some of the treatments that you can use during a drug overdose?
Well, we've heard about Narcan. Mm-hmm. Seems that that's the new phenomenal. Law enforcement agents, even parents now carrying this miracle thing. Mm-hmm. But when someone is having or experiencing an overdose, that is the choice to use Narcan. To undo the damages that are being done.
Is there a certain point where Narcan does not have an effect, or is it always safe to use?
Well, again, it depends on what is being used, how often, at the time that the first responders or the person administering Narcan began. It has a very positive effect. It may not be on the first trial, it may be on the second time, but most of the time it works, unless the person is already deceased, unfortunately, mm-hmm. and then nothing will bring that person back.
What are some tips to actually prevent, to not to get to the drug overdose?
Don't use. Prevent.
Yeah, well, that's...
I mean, right? I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Yeah. However, we know that that's easier said than done. There is not a clear definition of what would prevent an overdose other than to simply say, don't use. But if we want to simply state, mm-hmm. just follow the directions. If medication is prescribed at a certain time, at a certain quantity, the best tip that I can give is to follow the directions.
Yeah. And it's not really realistic to think that nobody does drugs, right? So...
It's a very unrealistic.
Abstinence is the safest way, but it's not really realistic.
That is correct, but it's not a realistic statement. And again, let's just understand that when we say drugs, it connotates a negative stigma because most of us, a lot of people around, are taking drugs legally. It doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. Drugs by itself sound negative. Drugs taken by prescription for a legitimate reason is actually helpful.
Yeah, that is true. The stigma surrounding the word drugs, people just assume are the illegal kind.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But OxyContin and Xanax and all of that at one point are prescribed and are legal.
They are. benzodiazepines and opioids are mm-hmm. prescription medications that are taken for legitimate reasons. If the person has... some authenticity,
legitimate
realistic
diagnosis.
Correct.
Now, what should I do or what should anyone do if they think somebody is overdosing?
911. Call 911. We're glad that the response time is, although it seems forever, mm-hmm. When you're in despair, they're pretty quick to respond, but call 911. We try to educate parents. We try to educate caregivers, picking up signs and symptoms of someone who may be experiencing an overdose. but they're not doctors. You know, again, we talked about Narcan and how easy it is to administer, and we know all that stuff, and it's out there and it's available. But the best tip that I can give someone who is witnessing someone going into an overdose is scream, yell, shout, whatever the word is, call 911 and get that help as soon as possible.
Yeah, I would agree. Not a doctor, but again, 911.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things that's been going around the news and that I see a lot of people talk about is fentanyl. I know it's going around. Even children are getting the hands on. What is fentanyl and what are some of the risks that you can have by taking it?
And you're correct. Fentanyl is around. It's been around for a while. It's a synthetic opioid. It is guesstimated to be 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. So you can imagine how strong this is and how dangerous it is. But it is manufactured for pain. Again, if it's being prescribed and regulated and managed by a physician, it has some benefits. Unfortunately, just like any other drug that we have, when people get a hold of it and recreationally use it, we have the potential for a disaster. And fentanyl has produced disastrous results.
Yeah.
I mean, death. I couldn't say it any nicer, but fentanyl kills and kills quite a lot of people.
Yeah. What are some of the symptoms? Like, can you tell if somebody's on fentanyl compared to something else?
You don't have to be an expert to see someone not acting or being themselves. To differentiate between the symptoms of fentanyl versus some other type of drugs may be a little tricky, but in a nutshell, unresponsiveness, vomiting, confusion, dilated pupils, heart palpitations, those are the basic symptoms that you can see visually without any further test, looking at someone and saying, oh my God, this person does not seem right. I mean, when someone is disoriented, it may not necessarily be fentanyl, but again, when you combine all the symptoms that I just described, it's not that hard to detect someone going through a withdrawal.
So you agree that those same symptoms could apply to other kinds of drugs?
Yes.
So just be on the lookout.
Correct.
Nice. Going back to the overdose and using drugs, what are some, what support is available out there?
Working for behavioral health, which encompasses, you know, people who are duly diagnosed, people who are struggling with addiction of all sorts and mental health. We've had rehabs and inpatient units, detoxes, outpatient units for years and years and years. Sure, they evolved. They've changed in the way they present themselves and how they sell their services.
Yeah.
But in the end, the support is there. The services are there. Someone who's addicted to fentanyl or any other types of drugs has the ability, if they desire to, get the help that's needed, whether it's a structured, daily, 24-hour-a-day care, whether it's outpatient, while conducting their normal day-to-day activities, going to school, going to work. The support is there. The help is there. We can definitely get into some details as to which type of therapy works better for. But in the end, 12-step models of recovery, mental health services, psychotherapy, going back to family of origin, finding out when, how, and why, all that put together in a nice piece of
cocktail.
Box and you get yourself
yeah.
a nice type of treatment service.
I think it's imperative, the fact that they have to want the help. Do you agree?
So the old saying is that you can lead a horse to the well, but you can't force the horse to drink from the well. Somewhat of it is true, but I will tell you that you can force someone to come into treatment if they're mandated,
okay.
Whether it's by legal means or family reasons, financial reasons, their job, saying either you go for treatment or you get fired. So they coerce to come to treatment. And the idea is that, but you can't force them to participate. That is true. But if you make them thirsty, just like you would make the horse thirsty, they're going to want to drink. They're going to want to get that information. Yeah. And that's why rehabilitation services don't just offer therapy all day long. They have to provide some enticement for someone to want to be in that particular facility and enjoy the services that are being offered for them.
Exactly. That's why they do a little bit of yoga, a little bit of painting, and then they throw group therapy holistic there in whole between.
Body. Absolutely. That's nice. Correct.
I mean, the yoga would get me, to be honest. If I have a loved one or see a loved one that I feel that is abusing drugs, what can I do for them?
First and foremost, be supportive. The idea is that this is, and I truly believe it, this is a disease like anything else. It's an insidious disease. It kills if ignored. If you approach it from the stance of that this is a disease that needs to be treated, it looks and viewed very differently than looking at it as, how can you do this to us, to your family, to me? How can you do this to yourself? You have everything going for you. Why would you do that? That's the first reaction, is that anger, like, if I ever hear you do this again, I will, and then you can fill in the blank for whatever comes next. But being supportive, being understanding that this is a disease, it may have started as a choice. I will tell you that 99.9% of the people that I have treated, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, have all made a choice to use one time. And that 0.1%, that margin of error, is being coerced to use, forced to use, which again, it happens. They will even say that peer pressure is being forced to use, right? But I'm talking about the majority of the people that are drug addicted have all made a conscious decision one time to pick up. But becoming addicted was 100% none of those people's choices, but it happened. And so again, going back to your question, how as a loved one can you support someone who you see in front of you is killing themselves literally slowly with addiction, is be supportive, be understanding, and get them the help that they need. Even in the beginning, if they feel that they don't need it or want it, get some information out there in the event that they are going to be ready and be willing to participate in treatment.
Exactly. Just have a lot of patience and always be resourceful. Let them know their options.
Yes. So easier said than done, but yes.
It is. Yeah. I have a friend whose brother, unfortunately, is addicted to heroin. And it's so hard. And it always comes down to, okay, he's my brother, but how many times am I going to help? And how many times am I going to allow this? And it can really get to you.
You know, you're saying something very interesting. It's not just a loved one that has to have patience. Unfortunately, even in the medical field, I have known people who are practicing medicine who still view addiction as a separate thing altogether. Yes, they have to accept the fact. Well, they don't have to, but they say that they accept the fact it is a disease, but they don't treat it like a disease. And I'll give you an example. If you have someone who is suffering from a heart condition or diabetes, right? There's supposed to be a diet that follows, a regimen of exercise, taking medications that are prescribed and regulated and not taken with caution and with all that good stuff.
There's a whole treatment plan for it.
And a client who's suffering goes and sees the doctor, and the doctor looks at him and says, you know, John, you haven't been following what I've been telling you. Look at your sugar. It's spiked up. You know, you're going to die. And I need you to go back to doing this and that and maybe make some adjustments with the medications. Mm-hmm. And then 3 months goes by and John comes back. And once again, the doctor looks at him. But the doctor will never say, I'm done with you. Mm-hmm. I'm refusing to treat you. Very seldomly will you see that, except with addiction. There are providers who would actually stop from seeing someone and treating them. It's too much of a liability. you're not following my directions. You're not doing what I'm asking you to do.
Yeah.
You're no longer going to be taken care of by me because I can't take the risk of what's going to happen to you if you don't follow. And that's where you see the changes between how people consider addiction and addiction to drugs and how to treat it.
Of course. And that can make a difference.
Huge difference. It's a huge difference being able to, again, going back to what you said, what kind of supports that are out there, and then having the support and being turned away from those supports.
For those that are able to get treatment and go to a rehab center, again, not the case for everyone, for other reasons, that could be a whole other episode. How long does addiction treatment typically take? I feel like it's different for everyone.
And we want to say that we custom tailor a treatment modality for every person, but that's not realistic. You group a group of people together under one roof who may have very, very, very similar symptoms, circumstances. But each person is different. They're different in the way they respond to treatment. Some have been there for the very first time. Some have been frequent flyers.
Some are regulars.
Yeah. It's a revolving door, and we know that. It's part of the industry. But typically, each person is looked at in terms of completion, a successful completion, based on common grounds. For example, person comes in, we identify their drug of choice. That's very important, you know, to know their drug of choice.
Okay.
The history of, you know, we do a full assessment, quite a lot of different types of assessments to get a good grounding to who we have in front of us. And then how is that person going to respond? Are they known to be in treatment facilities and in rehabs where they know the lingo, they know what to expect? Are they going to be flying under the radar, but just being, you know, very cooperative, but not responding because they're not really learning? They're just there for ulterior motives. We don't know that. It takes a while to build up. But a typical treatment modality can take a good 3 months, maybe even six, in combination of all levels of care. Obviously, you cannot, you know, maintain yourself in one level of care for a very long time. You'd have to kind of transition through as you progress or regress. But typically, we would like to see that the longer the treatment, the better the outcome. Data shows that, statistics show that the longer the person is involved and engaged in treatment, the better. And I don't mean being housed in a 24-hour facility forever. We're not looking to turn this into a 30-year mortgage. we're looking for someone to come in, get the basis, get the foundation going, get the understanding, some goals. We give them a belt with tools, and then give them a gentle push to go outside and use the resources that they've learned first or reacquainted themselves with, as well as the resources and support that they have on the outside, to be in therapy forever. And I mean therapy forever means being able to open up and to talk to people, be receptive to information and provide information. This is why people go to AA and NA and 12-step support groups, because they got to get involved in something. To continue going with that traditional, you know, I'm still in therapy kind of mode.
And I can imagine how hard it must be for someone to go back and try to avoid the usual environment that might lead you to go back.
It's relearning what you have habitually learned. You know, again, maybe a different segment, but you and I can sit and we can talk about addiction and reasons. We can open up a library and give reasons why people become addicted and what they need to do about it. But in the end, it really is an individually based disease. It kills the person and everyone around, but the person who is the nucleus of the identified patient is a person that really, really needs to be desired to want to stop using, so everybody else can benefit from that sobriety.
Exactly. It's a domino effect.
It really is.
Yeah. Now, the treatments, the rehab centers or the outside support, what are some of Well, specifically, what are some of the benefits of going to a treatment facility compared to only getting therapy outside of the treatment facility?
What's the benefits of going to school? I mean, you know.
Debatable.
Right? It's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, someone who comes into treatment, especially those that have been coming in and out, they are experts when it comes to using drugs. They really are. I have met some phenomenal, phenomenal patients along the years of practice. They, by trade, are nowhere near what you would consider to be physicists or pharmacists, chemists, mm-hmm. biologists, but they are. They are, because they learn so well how to measure. Well, unfortunately, sometimes they don't know how to measure because they do too much of their measurements, mm-hmm. but they really become an expert of using substances. What they lack is how to stop using once they start.
Okay.
That's where we come in. And interestingly enough, you would see even in the medical field, doctors being treated by other doctors. And you would think, well, I'm a doctor. I know what's wrong with me. Why can't I treat myself? Because that's not my expertise. And so when we talk about services offered to an addict or an alcoholic, we really are trying to educate and teach on a territory that they have not enchanted before, because they don't know how to stop. If they did, they wouldn't need me.
Yeah, they wouldn't go and reach out and
Correct.
Go to a treatment facility.
Correct. Well, unfortunately, some of them think that they know how to stop, but history shows, because they hear once again, John, and I keep going to John, Bob, you're here again. What didn't you do? Not what haven't you learned? Because we find that the majority of the people that return back to treatments have not followed recommendations. Whatever the recommendations were based on their therapy, if they did, good chances they wouldn't be back.
From your experience, what is the success rate that you see in your own patients?
That's a real tricky question. I will tell you that statistics are not favorable for addicts. Mm-hmm. They depict a very negative number, and I'll tell you why. Imagine for a second going to a doctor and getting treatment for an ailment that miraculously has been dealt with, even resolved. Good chances you're not going to continue to call the doctor and say, hey, I just want to let you know I'm still doing well.
Okay.
You know, you go in to see the doctor when you need to, when you don't need to. And so what happens is, people graduate rehabs, and we stay in touch like we do here, 3 months, 6 months, a year. But after a while, they get sick of reporting to us, and we can't find them. They flourish. They grow. They move on, which is the goal, right? So we don't hear a lot back. We only hear when they need to. And so statistics really follow people who relapse and come back to treatment and kind of weigh the success, which is wrong. But to answer your question, there is no magic number. I want to tell you maybe 5%, 8%, but that would be like, oh my God, you know, then what's the point?
Well, yeah. So
every one person's life saved is worth what we do.
Exactly. Now, based on that, do you have different definitions of success? Like, what is a successful story
yes.
for you? Or
so let me just tell you that we don't have a cure for what we treat. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that people understand the distinction between cure and treatment. Addiction, like other types of ailments, are not curable. They're treatable. They're treatable. They don't just go away. And we want to say, you know, even those that have 20, 30 years of sobriety, the lingo is that they're an arm length away from their next relapse. And we say an arm length away is because it's that close. People tend to forget that they've had a problem, you know, because it becomes habitual to not use anymore, right? But success to me is someone's attempts. Someone who's really putting an effort in staying clean, staying sober, staying healthy is success. Again, depends on who you ask. There are some people in the industry who would say the minute that person touched anything, they failed in their attempt. And that's not my personal opinion. My personal opinion is that if you are able to maintain sobriety, and with sobriety comes in a different type of a lifestyle, success is continuing to make a conscious decision every single day to just make it through the next day.
Exactly. One day at a time.
That is correct.
Yeah. I feel everybody should do that one day at a time. Talk about anxiety and stress. Like, just live in the present moment.
All right.
If I am someone who has gone through treatment and now feels great and better, and I happen to relapse, what are some of your suggestions?
You know, come right back. Pick up that phone. Use the support that you have. It's a cliche. It's a question that I'm asked all the time, no matter where I am or what would you do if someone relapsed? Well, you get them right back in. What would you do if you made an attempt and something failed in your attempt? You attempt again. What's the alternative? Well, again, I've relapsed. I might as well. And sometimes that happens when somebody is actually saying, I might as well just continue. And those are the tragic statistics that we see. But what we do as part of our treatment, when somebody is about to embark on a discharge plan, we go over the relapse prevention plan. And a relapse prevention plan is, amongst many things, is using your supports, using your families, and then getting to identify what your triggers are possibly before that relapse actually happens. Okay. And that's very important to understand that part of our work is to help you, the identified patient, recognize signs and symptoms, trigger signs that you would kind of like know it's about to happen, you know? And then we educate the families or the collaterals, someone that's important in the client's life, if we're able to, be able to pick up those signs and symptoms. Because unfortunately, sometimes we see on the outside things about the person that the person is failing to recognize themselves, right?
Yeah.
It's a collaborative effort on all part.
What resource are available to help manage an addiction? I know we've named a few, but to just manage at, I can't say 100%, but the best you can, so you avoid relapse.
Well, again, there's the traditional therapies, which is what we do. You know, you heard all these fancy acronyms, CBT, DBT, EMDR. I mean, those have evolved over the years to meet the challenges of the new synthetics and the new drugs. And we modernized just about everything, including our drugs, so we had to match it with the type of treatments that we offer. But then you also have what you and I talked about earlier, the word drugs. There are good drugs. There are drugs that are being prescribed to offset the consequences. Well, not the consequences, but offset the symptoms and sometimes even the psychological and physical components of addiction. MAT, medication-assisted treatment, we implement those. So it's the traditional talk therapy and medical intervention that helps someone with addiction.
Yeah. And again, the support, right? Very important.
It's a huge component to treatment. You can't do this alone. You have to have somebody on the outside that is willing to be supportive or hold you accountable.
Exactly.
Otherwise, you're your own enemy, you know?
Yeah, that could be very bad.
Yeah.
Is there any last message you would like to tell anybody that might be listening, whether it's a professional or a person who's going through drug addiction or relapse?
You know, I've had the opportunity and the pleasure to speak in quite many different forums. And I always kind of remind myself, you know, I'm an older product. That in the early 80s, and some of the people watching, when was that? But in the early 80s, we had a former first lady who coined or declared the term war on drugs. And I unfortunately want to say that in the last, 30 or more years, we haven't won. But what we have done is we've been winning battles. Not the war, but the battles. The battles are those individual people that come into treatment asking for help. The best advice that I can continue to preach is to let people know that recovery is not as difficult as it may seem. The goal is to make recovery, a sober life, become as habitual as it was for someone to use. Meaning you get up in the morning and you go through your daily routine because of a habit. You don't even realize why you're doing it because you're doing it because it's a habit, and to have recovery be that part of the habit.
Exactly.
So my last message, there's hope. There's resources available. Even if you don't feel that you are internally motivated to come to treatment and you're only externally motivated because of circumstances on the outside, come on in.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Go for it.
Come on in. Let us do our work. And change that external into an internal motivational factor. So when you leave, you can actually inspire others. And that's what we see every single day.
I feel that doesn't matter. Everybody always asks me, should I go to therapy or should I go to treatment? It's not going to make it worse. If anything, it's going to make it better. Right? And
that
if
is,
it doesn't
that,
have effect,
that is
I
correct.
Doubt that, but... Like
that is
said,
correct. I mean, listen, you get therapy from when people get their haircuts or get their nails done and you're talking to the other person. That's therapy. Therapy is actually talking, being receptive to information, exchanging information, and then utilizing some of the things that was said, taking into heart and saying, you know what? I'm going to try that. It may work. And it does. Keep coming back. It works. If you work it, so work it. You're worth it.
Wow, that's a riddle right there.
There you go.
I don't think I can repeat that.
Yes, you can.
Well, I want to say thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Yeah, very important conversation.
Absolutely.
We should do part two and go more into depth.
Let's do part two, part three, and four.
Yeah, but thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you guys for watching and or listening, depending on our platform. Don't forget to subscribe. If you liked what we talked about, please don't forget to leave us a comment. And I'll see you next week.
Take care.